When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shiny phone on your lap, Ian.
You sure do.
Welcome to the CU Podcast, post-Comic-Con edition for Tuesday, July 23rd, 2019. A few weeks away from Ian's birthday.
Oh, it is.
It's Ian Ferguson.
Hi.
I'm Pat Contry. On the show, we're talking about the MCU Phase 4 reveal. A class action lawsuit against good old Nintendo? Or Uncle Nintendo? GTA Online Casino opens. That's not going to be problematic, I'm sure. Google Stadia update. Pat might have got a rare game. And a Patreon poll topic, maybe a Q&A. Ian, Comic-Con came and gone. That kind of rhymes a little
Comic-Con
bit.
Comic-Con came and gone.
Did you get anything good?
I bought the first and, I believe, last appearance of the Proletarian.
What's the Proletarian?
The Proletarian is Colossus, convinced that he needs to be wearing red linen pajamas.
Okay, so he's Commie Colossus?
Yes.
Commie Colossus.
It was a segment of an arc of the X-Men are in like one of those arcade dungeons, you know, arcade.
The arcade guy.
Yeah, the wild guy. And basically someone, it's not like brainwashing, someone talks to and convinces Colossus that the X-Men are no good, and he becomes the Proletarian, and then he fights the X-Men for a while, but then, like, Storm and, Storm and Cyclops are like, no, but wait, you're our friend. And he's like, you're right, I am your friend.
Doesn't matter, you're evil capitalist.
And that's...
Sounds like Colossus is like a majority of the college freshmen I knew back in the day. You know, you take one class and think you know the worldview, and... But the good Colossus came back to the right side there.
But anyways, you know, it's the hero that we deserve.
Proletarian. I want a Commie Colossus.
But it's got a great cover. It's Colossus in his linen pajamas.
So it was just a one-shot issue.
I mean, it's part of a longer issue, but yeah, the whole Proletarian thing is kind of just a one and
done. Wow, Colossus is that easy to convince. You know, that is politics and stasis on economics.
I also I got a Kitty Pryde's Bedtime Stories. There's a Kitty Pryde issue. There's an X-Men issue where it's one of those issues that just, like, it's an interlude in between what's normally going on and the X-Men sit around and tell, like, bedtime stories.
Oh, okay.
It's the first appearance of the Bamps, the little tiny cute Nightcrawlers.
I don't think I've ever seen those in a comic, but all right.
And I bought some horror comics.
Oh, you and James commiserate on your love of horror and Dracula. James bought a few of the... Tomb of Dracula's. He's into those.
I was thinking about buying them, but I didn't.
I think you and Frank suggested to find a trade paperback that has them all collected. I didn't buy a trade paperback this year. It's the first time in many years. And while there still are some, there's not those two big places there used to be that I used to go buy them at. So it's like the one where Stanley used to show up at. That place doesn't sell those anymore. I don't think they even have a booth. But I used to spend 2 hours looking through those 1,000-plus trade paperbacks. So
I didn't see any shortage of them, but now that you mentioned
that place isn't there.
There's a place that was against the back wall that used to be there that I used to stop at all the time.
But that big one I was told you about hasn't been there for a couple of years. And that's where everyone would, out in the open, would go and look at them. I'd buy stuff from there every year. I'd spend time looking for Frank, looking for the Marvel Masterpiece ones. And they don't have it anymore. So the problem with that is that there's less and less of those out there. And you go to like Torpedo, you don't get those like heavy discounts that you do at like the places like that where it's like 50% off.
And Torpedo is all 50% off to start.
Okay, then they don't have the selections other places because they have mostly newer stuff. They don't have the older stuff from like 5, 6, 10 years ago. That's the juice. I want like the collection of like, you know, X-Men from like the 60s or 70s or you know, Avengers from the 60s. That's the stuff that I look for. And maybe like, you know, I got like the whole Demon in a Bottle Iron Man trade paperback 1 or 2 years ago, or Streets of Poison, Captain America going around with Diamondback, you know, fighting off drugs on the street. You know, it's like a late 80s, early 90s Captain America anti-drug story. You know, stuff like that. That's the stuff I look for there. But we had fun. I mentioned Frank, but not Frank Cifaldi. So Frank Cifaldi got to hang around with Frank Cifaldi, trying to buy up every video game comic he could at the convention. The Valiant Nintendo comics and Captain N, and also looking for, like, the weird stuff that I never even heard of.
Well, that was him, you know, and Vonnie's, like, plan.
That was the goal.
The goal was to go find the comics, because he didn't have a bunch of them and she did, so they went around and anything they found that Vonnie didn't have, Frank bought.
They said Frank bought it first, and I bought a few when I was...
No, anything Vonnie already had, Frank bought.
I thought you said Frank bought. That's what I said. And so I bought a few comics, and then I made a purchase we'll talk about later at the show. This was the first time that not the first time that Seal Video Games were represented at some of the bigger comic auction booths, but they had not been there for a couple of years. I think I told you a few years ago they were there, and then they weren't.
They tried to worm it in with VGC, but it didn't work.
It didn't take off. Now, being that WADA launched last year, and now there's a lot of stuff with Heritage Auctions and Certified Link, and those guys show up there, Heritage and Gold Comic Link, Certified Link. They had on display next to comics built in, graded video games, including one what was the one, Urban Champion, estimated pre-auction prices, that comes 15,000 and up for an Urban Champion, and that's just what they do to pump up the price and get it going. I even talked, actually the guy was nice, I said, really? I said 15,000. He's like, well, it's just a price estimate, that's not based on anything, obviously.
Yeah,
it's absolutely based on nothing, and maybe we'll go for 15,000 up for an Urban Champion. I just know how many Urban Champion people out there are going to spend that much on that game, you know, for that. But that's
Urban Champion people, there's like five less of those than there are Clue Clue Land people, which means that there's negative four.
I think it's neck and neck in the running for the Urban Champion versus Clue Clue Land fan club. Clue Clue Club? Anyway, so there was like three places that had games there. Even stuff just like, it wasn't even like sealed stuff. It was just like, like a complete in box graded Metroid. It wasn't even sealed. You know, like 7.0. It was just strange for me to see that. And I get into heated discussions with people about it's not the same as comic books. I'm trying to explain why, that each system is different. It has its niches and what's rare, what's not. And actually, one of the comic guys agreed with me, saying, it's not like comic books, but the one person trying to convert me and get me to like grade all my stuff, who actually even offered to come over and buy stuff that weekend, I said, no, that's not happening. But it's all in good fun. It's all in good spirits there. In terms of how it felt, it's always going to be busy just because Comic-Con now, you know, it's an equal number of people in each 4 days, because that's how they sell the tickets now. So it's always busy even on a Sunday. It just felt more subdued on the outside to me. It felt like there was a little, just slightly less bustle going on outside, like the stuff set up outside than previous years.
That's an obvious result of them just banning the majority of front-facing traffic.
Oh, sure. But I'm talking about, like, you didn't hear about, was there a Sonic party this year? Sci-fi wasn't there. There wasn't, like, a big adult swim carnival like previous years set up.
The carnival was a different thing this year.
It was a different thing this year?
There's still a carnival.
Okay,
there's still a bunch
that.
Of setups. As a matter of fact, out front looked really crushed to me. It's just, you know, some of the tried and true things. But
it seemed like there was more space. Looking just from my eyeballs, like there was more space. There wasn't like a South Park, you know, big funhouse thing set up, you know, in the space that usually was going to be used. Now, if you go a block down, there was still some stuff. There was like an Amazon Prime parking lot that was, you know, cordoned off, and they had stuff. There was still like the Picard, museum thing in Conan Comics. It just seemed like slightly, I want to say like it was like dead, but it seemed like it was slightly subdued. I mean, Warner Brothers wasn't even at the event this year. There was less huge, I think, surprise stuff happening than usual. We kind of knew almost everything that was going to be there.
Except for the Marvel stuff.
Oh, we knew all the Marvel stuff. That was all rumored except for one thing.
Well, yeah, all rumored, but I mean, they hadn't announced it.
Heavily rumored. You want to talk about Marvel real quick? We'll
sure.
talk about Marvel.
Yeah, go for it.
As quick as we can. Let's talk about real quick. Top Gun 2 trailer came out. It looks really good. It looks better than it should be for a Top Gun movie 30-plus years later. Film in our backyard here. Filming in San Diego, Miramar. It's where, I don't think Top Gun School is in Miramar anymore, but it used to be just north of here, 20 minutes. The Picard series looks good as well.
I didn't see the trailers for those.
It looks like it's shot beautifully. It looks like it's shot like a movie.
I know that he has beautiful. A dog, so that's he's got important. A dog? He's got a dog. That's he's got important. Dog.
To Picard's not a cat person. That's Data. Data comes back in the Picard series. So
yeah,
does
I noticed that.
So does Riker,
that.
Supposedly. So, all right. So, MCU Phase 4. Lots of properties to discuss, both between the movies and the Disney Plus service, which is launching this fall. I thought this fall is going to have at least one Marvel show. Looks like it's not. It's going to be next year, but there's a lot of stuff going on here. So we'll just run through this list from this Entertainment Weekly article. The first thing that we know is coming that they're shooting right now is Black Widow, which will obviously be a prequel to her. Spoilers, dying. I'm guessing it's probably going to have like some flashbacks, but it might, maybe it takes place during the blip in the 5 years. That's what I'm going to guess. It'll probably, you know,
yeah,
have her dealing with stuff and blah, 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 blah. So that's like going to be her send off. She deserved a standalone movie. She was the first, you know, female superhero in the MCU going back to 2010's mediocre as hell Iron Man 2. The only reason that movie should it really exists in retrospect was to introduce Black Widow. There is nothing else of substance. Yeah, if you want to say Don Cheadle being recast, that's about it as War Machine. Like, that's it. There was no other reason for that movie to exist. It has no ties to anything really. So that'll be fun. Probably okay. Falcon and Winter Soldier. This is probably one of the I'm most excited about. This is going to be a series.
Yeah, I think this will be fun.
This is fall 2020. They have good chemistry. Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan. They're like opposites. It's almost like, honestly, it's like Lethal Weapon but superheroes. That's probably what it's going to be. You know, one more straight laced and one more sort of edgy and ready to kill someone anytime. That's basically what it's going to be. So I'm excited about that, and I like the Falcon's one of my favorite sort of B characters in the MCU. And then they're bringing back Baron Zemo. Well, now officially Baron Zemo. That was the big thing, too. That was the one thing that people... That was probably a surprise. So, I remember his name was just Zemo in Civil War. Excellent villain, because he was just a guy who was smart and had a plan. And
yeah,
now
he was fantastic.
And now they're going to give him probably the hooded mask and have an organization. So, that's good. That's a bread and butter, you know, Captain America villain that doesn't get talked about a lot. So, that's good. The Eternals, not too excited about it since I don't know much about it. That's a cosmic group of really old people. They're Eternals. They're superheroes. Do you know much about the Eternals?
No, but I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be something interesting. It's just a fresh license, something that I don't know much about, so it'll be exciting for me to go into it and see something new.
So that's 2020, November 6th. So you only have, looks like there's no other movie this year, so you only had... You had three MCU movies this year, if you count Far From Home, which is basically what on par with what they've been doing, 2 to 3. And then we have a big gap now between there's nothing going to be in the fall, nothing going to be in the spring until Black Widow in May. So that's kind of weird to have like almost like a nine month sort of layoff, 10 month layoff in between movies there. So you got the Eternals, November 2020, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, February 2021. We knew this was coming. So this was a big comic in the 70s, got started with the big, you know, the kung fu and karate stuff got big in the 70s and pop cultures. This was a comic alongside Iron Fist that was out there. I didn't read much of it. So this would be the first Asian superhero movie we get here. They cast Simu Liu. I'm not familiar with him at all. But the big thing is that the Mandarin's going to be the villain. So... Which is interesting because you had the fake Mandarin
in
Iron Man 3, and people were pissed about that. So it's just weird that now that Iron Man's gone, you're not going to have Iron Man versus Mandarin, but they're going to somehow bring it back into the fold with the Ten Rings. Because remember, the Ten Rings in Iron Man 1, that was the terrorist group. So like they set it up. They just never followed through with it, which is why people were pissed off about Iron Man 3. I still liked Iron Man 3.
I loved Iron Man 3. I thought it was fantastic.
And they actually retconned that the Mandarin exists in a short film that they put out for that Iron Man 3 DVD, where Ben Kingsley is in prison and then he finds out that they're coming for him, like the real Mandarin. So they kind of massage that. Okay, we know we kind of went too far, and so he still exists out there, so they're going to use it. WandaVision, which is probably the worst name, but
I love the name. I mean,
how about Scarlet Vision? Would that have been better?
I think it's hilarious.
They're probably going to change the name,
yes.
I would guess.
I just think it's funny sounding.
That's not coming until spring 2021, so that's a good over a year and a half away there. So that's going to be, obviously, Vision, who's going to come back. and Scarlet Witch is going to be in the series. Elizabeth Olsen said it's going to get weird. All right. That's going to be interesting. That's going to lead directly into Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness in May 2021. So this is going to be probably a mind F of a movie, most likely.
It's looking like it's probably going to touch on horror. I mean, the announcement thing they did even looks like the cover to Clive Barker's The Mouth of Madness.
Oh, really? I didn't see that. Okay. I didn't see the poster.
It's so,
and then this is going to have basically Scarlet Witch as a co-star in it as well. So it's like a team-up movie. And if you're going to have a way to, we'll just say, pull in other properties you might purchase, this could be a way to do it. Maybe there's going to be a rift in the multiverse and whatever else, and then something weird happens, and then it brings in other things. Because we thought it might happen with the Endgame and the Snap. That was a theory. But they brought up the multiverse in the first Doctor Strange movie, so they're capitalizing on it here. And remember, this is going to be the first Doctor Strange movie came out already, what, 2 years ago?
Two and a half? I feel like it's even longer than that.
Well, yeah. It was after Civil War. It was end of 2016. It's almost been 3 years. So that's a five-year layoff in between sequels. Wow. But that's how the MCU rolls. They don't do a whole 2 to 3 year thing on these movies sometimes. Loki, spring 2021. That'll be fun. It's going to be the Loki that we saw in Endgame that escapes from Avengers in 2012. So there's still a Loki. Everyone loves Loki. It'll be fun. So you find out what happened to him after he escaped with the Tesseract, right? A What If animated series, summer 2021. That'll be fun.
That'll be fun, yes.
Because they're not going to do a movie like, what if Ben Parker survived? What would happen to Spider-Man? Like, so that's something that'll be fun. And that'll be, again, this is all on Disney+. Hawkeye, fall of 2021. That'll be interesting. That's a big layoff for Hawkeye, but all right, we're waiting 2 years plus for that at this point. But that'll be interesting, and that might be probably the last time you see Jeremy Renner. Maybe, we don't know. But it's good that they find a space for these characters, you know, if they're not going to be co-starring in any movies, because we don't have any Avengers movies on the docket at all for Phase 4. So that'll be fun, and they're going to bring in Kate Bishop, who also, I guess that happened in the comics as well. You had the Hawkeye Jr. come in at some point. So, okay.
That's going to be awesome. That's going to be real cool. I like Hawkeye when he works with Bishop.
Okay. And then Thor Love and Thunder is not coming until November 2021.
I'm into it.
So that's a 4 year layoff in between sequels, which was about 4 years in between the second and third. It was 4 years exactly. So this is going to be Taika Waititi returning to direct. And it's going to have Tessa Thompson coming back as Valkyrie. And then it's going to have Natalie Portman. This is probably going to want to be tick off some people that Natalie Portman's coming back as Jane Foster and going to be wielding Thor's hammer like she did in the comics. So that's going to be interesting. It'll be, I love Thor Ragnarok. So that'll be interesting as well. It's going to be interesting to see what the dynamic's going to be. If it's going to be Thor willingly giving it over or he's depressed and she takes it over because he can't do it anymore. Is this going to be a way to write him out of the MCU or what have you? It's going to be interesting to see what direction they take it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that probably more than any of them at this point.
Yeah, that's going to be... And it's weird because Natalie Portman said she was done with these movies.
Well, yeah, that's what I was about to ask. But like a year ago, she was like, no, I'm finished.
She was finished. And the footage for her in Endgame was all B-roll stuff that they used. So... I guess they figure we'll give you a good role.
Yeah, here. What the hell got her back? I mean,
well, she gets to be Thor. But it'll be interesting because it was actually pretty funny at Thor Ragnarok at the beginning. They mentioned the breakup off screen. Like, yeah, we broke up. Like, oh, she broke up with you. Loki was trying to tease him. Like I said, it'll be interesting. Like Chris Hemsworth has been absolutely magical the past few years as Thor. Once they sort of unshackled him and let him be his own personality, not just like Shakespearean Thor,
right?
For the first one, he's been like the glue that's held together a lot of these movies as they come along. And Tessa Thompson has been fantastic as well. Then the one surprise, the one thing that we had no idea was happening, Blade being announced with Mahershala Ali playing Blade. He kind of looks like Wesley Snipes a little bit. Oscar winner. Outstanding actor. I still have to see him in True Detective season 3. He obviously was in season one of Luke Cage as a villain. So now the joke is that two out of three villains from Luke Cage have been in MCU movies. But the third one won't probably. Cottonmouth probably won't be. So that's going to be interesting. I almost think that Blade, though, works better as a series, even though that TNT one didn't do well. That's probably a low budget. But, yeah, that was the big reveal. And then other than that, we know that Captain Marvel 2 is coming. We know that Black Panther 2 is coming.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
We know Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is going to come eventually, because now he's got to work on shitty Suicide Squad. And then obviously there's going to be a third Spider-Man movie, but that's not really Marvel's thing. That's really Sony. So, you know, I would suggest we would probably see, obviously in Phase 4, there's going to be a Spider-Man movie, whether it's going to be 2 years or 3 years. We'll see. I would guess 2 years. They've been on a 2 year track on these movies. Just, there's no reason to think that it won't be. So anyways, that's exciting. Plus we got D23 next month. And so I'm sure they'll talk about other things, including the one thing mentioned at the end, Ian, when they said, well, we don't have time to talk about Fantastic Four. We don't have time to talk about mutants. That's what they said at the panel. So they're going to drop them into Phase 4. It's just, I think, how they're going to introduce them with another movie. Will it be in Doctor Strange? Will it be throwing in with Spider-Man? I like the idea of putting him in the next Spider-Man movie, just because they were so a part of Spider-Man's early going. I mean, the cover of the first issue, he tries to get into Fantastic Four. So I think it'll be interesting to see what direction they go. So the one thing, though, what's not being congealed yet is that, you know, is there going to be like a new Avengers team? Who's the main villain? Is there going to be a main villain over the next 10 years?
Right.
There's a couple of rumors with that. The one that seems more solid at this point, but it might be weird because it's Sony. The one big rumor that Norman Osborn is going to be the big baddie for this generation, that he buys Stark's old building in New York City and it gets some tech and he's smart and brings in villains. That's the one rumor. To me, the obvious one is Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
Because Doctor Doom is awesome. And once you know, and not that Norman Osborn couldn't be a formidable villain by himself. He can be, but Doctor Doom is like, come on.
Yeah. I really want to see Doctor Doom done
properly
done well.
Third time will be the charm, but they're going to bring him in. So I don't think we'll see a movie with those characters though for at least at this point 3-4 years. I thought they're going to try to do Fantastic Four for 2021. Apparently not. They're not going to rush it, but there could be other stuff announced next month. We'll see. So any other thoughts on this stuff here?
No. Like I said, I think the Thor movie is honestly the one I'm looking forward to the most. I don't go to see all these. All the ones that I do go see, though, I enjoy. So
I see all these movies.
I still haven't seen Homecoming or Far From Home.
I haven't seen either Spider-Man movie. Mm-mm. Oh, okay.
So I'll get there. But yeah, I think Eternals and Thor are the ones that I'm looking forward to the most, and it looks like I'm going to be waiting a while.
Eternals could be the one I skip, if anything, at this point, unless this trailer looks really good. I don't like cosmic groups of immortal characters. This doesn't appeal to me. It's not grounded enough. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Guardians
there.
Of the Galaxy is grounded enough.
They're not super powered people. They're all kind of schlubs working together. You know, that's different than, again, stakes. If they're too powerful, what's the point? They're immortals. I mean, then what can harm them, or what can they struggle against, you know?
Well, I'm sure that's what makes the movie interesting.
Okay. Well, that was my problem with Captain Marvel at the end. It was like, okay, she just ripped through the entire squad. It's like, okay, great. Awesome. I was on a boat, Ian, on Friday night. Shout out to a guy who doesn't need a shout out, Justin Roiland of Rick and Morty. He's one of the co-creators of Rick and Morty, and I didn't find out until afterwards he does the voices of Rick and Morty. When I was talking to him, I was like, oh, I hear a little bit of it, but I wasn't sure. I didn't want to be weird and ask him. He invited James out to a boat party. I was the plus one, but he was familiar with my work as well, so I was kind of surprised. Like, oh, he's like, oh yeah, Pat, I know your stuff. I was like, oh, thank you for having me on a wacky boat party. I won't go into what happened on there for legal reasons probably, no. But it was fun to do that, and we had a good time there. So we're going to start, Ian, with Nintendo facing. Nintendo faces lawsuits before, but this is going to be an interesting one.
So anyone who's had a Switch or knows anyone who's had a Switch knows that the Joy-Cons can be a bit problematic, the thumbstick on the joysticks, on the detachable Joy-Cons. They have an issue where they drift. meaning that the Joy-Con will act like it's holding in a direction that it's not being held in, and if you let go of the controller, your character's just going to keep moving.
And it's usually like the left one more than the right? That's what I've experienced on mine.
It can be the left one, but it seems to just be any of the sticks. It's the analog sticks that are the problem, the design of them. So, yeah, I mean, depending on what you play, you're going to put more wear and tear on your left stick. So it might break first, but it's happened with both. It happens with both. So, Chimicles, Schwartz, Kreiner, and Donaldson Smith.
That's the best name for a law firm.
That's a law firm.
Chemically, Schwartz, Kreiner, and Donaldson Smith.
It rolls right off the tongue. are looking to file a class action lawsuit against Nintendo, and now they're gathering people to join the class action lawsuit.
So they've heard this issue in the public, perhaps. They're like, you know what? They probably had a couple people they know talking about. Let's see if we can put something together here. Let's see if we can do something.
Right. I can't say that this is why it's coming out now, but the concern about the drift on the analog sticks, it's always been around, but with the Switch, the beauty thing is you just take the whole controller off and replace it with another one. I mean, to repair your system, you just buy another controller. It's easy.
Okay.
With the Switch Lite, however, people are concerned because, okay, hey, if they don't get these fucking joysticks together, you know, we're buying a $200 unit.
Oh, sure, I see
that. And the joysticks are going to be crap. So people have been talking about it a lot more lately, ever since that was announced. And, you know, this is coming out at the right time, I think, where people are noticing, maybe, you know, these aren't the best built things and we should be a little concerned.
I'm not carrying Nintendo's water, but I'm sure they figured out the issue by now if something was defective on that for the new ones. You know, like I don't know if this is even all hardware or and/or software, because when it happened to me, it only happened to me, I want to say, 3 or 4 times.
Oh, it's definitely hardware.
It's definitely hardware.
Oh yeah, it's a hardware thing.
Okay, because when it happened,
you can go into your Switch and test your joysticks and see right where the problems are.
Okay, I guess when it happened to me, when it started to drift, I think it happened on Breath of the Wild a couple times. I'm trying to think how I stopped it. But I was able to stop it. I can't remember how. This was a couple years ago.
Well, keep in mind the controller disconnecting and reconnecting is different than drift.
Sure. No, I've drifted too. Okay. I'm trying to remember how I did it. If I just like flicked the stick and fixed it, or if I
probably,
or if I undocked it or unconnected and reconnected it. I don't know what I did for it to do.
Probably janky jumbled the stick and moved on.
So this is what the statement was. CSKND have filed a class action lawsuit against Nintendo of America for claims related to alleged defects in the Joy-Con controllers that are part of Nintendo Switch gaming consoles. The complaint, filed in the United States District Court for the Western District of Washington, alleges that the joysticks on Joy-Con controllers are defective, leading users to experience drift issues. Specifically, the complaint alleges that the joystick on the Joy-Con controllers will automatically register movement when the joystick is not being controlled by the user and interfere with gameplay. The complaint, filed on behalf of purchasers of Switches and Joy-Con controllers, brings claims under various consumer protection statutes as well as various warranty and common law claims. All right, so obviously there's this is going to go into probably a settlement at some point. I mean, I don't see something like this. First of all, it's going to litigate for potentially years. Stuff like this does not get settled quickly because there's a lot of money at stake.
Yeah, sure.
Nintendo's thinking, okay, so the worst case scenario is we might be up to replace every single, like at least one Joy-Con for every single person who bought a Switch. Worst case scenario. Obviously, that's very worst. That would be hundreds of millions of dollars that's at risk. Or even only the people that, you know, when these things happen, I get things in the mail every now and then. Oh, you're part of this class action lawsuit for an airbag thing that killed a couple of people. So, you know, you get a credit for something. Or even a Gillette razor that was falsely advertised. I've gotten like a free Gillette razor in the mail. I'm like, I don't know how they found me, but they found me. You know, I feel like Doc Brown. How did they find me? Anyway. And there's other ones. I don't know if you ever got one in the mail. It's always says, oh, you can opt out or you're automatically put in this class. Yeah. Or if you want to sue yourself, you can always opt out of the class action. So this is how this is. If I had to put on my cap, this is how I think this is going to end up. This is going to be something where something's going to be sent out through. They're going to get who bought a Switch somehow through Nintendo, through the user IDs, whatever. They'll send out a mailing and say, do you want, you know, you're going to be able to get a credit that Nintendo will supply for whatever, $15, $20. It's not going to be like everyone's going to get a Joy-Con. It's not going to be something like that, I can almost guarantee you. It's going to be something, we'll give you a partial credit, or Nintendo will give you credit for a purchase. The same thing that happened with the lawsuit, remember in the 90s, that Nintendo lost about the anti-monopoly thing. Everyone got like $5 or $10 off a Nintendo game.
Oh, yeah.
That was the settlement with that. So I agree with something like this, just because, you know, these Joy-Cons aren't cheap to replace one. It's, what, $50 in the store, MSRP for one? Of these, and you shouldn't have to with something that's that, you know, it's that integral to the product,
right?
You know, so we'll see. This will be very slow going. Something like this, there's a ton of money at stake, and there's a lot of Nintendo has probably bulldog lawyers on retainer that are gonna, you know, fight as much as they can to get this down to something reasonable. They're probably gonna have to in some sort of discovery. Show that Nintendo either knew about this or knew that there was an acceptable level of defect at a certain percentage level. They probably have notes about that. I'm sure Nintendo knew about this when these were coming out, that there was something wrong. But maybe it's a smaller percentage. Maybe it's like 20% or 15%. Maybe they'll say that, well, it's unnecessary wear and tear over time, that it's going to happen to anything. But, you know what I mean? This is what they're going to argue. But they'll get this to some point where it'll be acceptable for Nintendo and to this law firm to make some sort of money off of this. You know, otherwise, why else is this law firm, you know, following this? They think there's going to be some sort of monetary settlement at some point. Or, you know, class action lawsuits are weird. So I don't know. We'll see where this ends up. What are you thinking? You know, what you think? You want to get a nice Nintendo certificate and credited to your account to buy another one? I mean,
I don't know. I just hope they get it taken care of.
They're not going to mail out a Joy-Con to every single person.
No.
They're not going to do that. That's not how these things work.
I don't care about that. I'm just hoping that... I my thoughts are beyond that. I'm just legitimately hoping they've got the situation handled before the Mini comes
out. Oh, you think that there's probably different generations they produce to these, right? You know, first generation... You have a,
sure, but I mean, I've heard that these issues have been happening with basically all of them.
Even newer ones.
Yeah, even newer ones. It's not just an older...
So they know the drift thing. Issue they pretty much fix after the first batch, right?
No, the disconnect issue they pretty much
fix. I mean disconnect, after, yeah. Disconnect, they fixed that, so they figured out that. But they supplied with a free fix to people on that. Who suggested it?
You could send it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that only happened to me. That happened, I think, once or twice. I think that was, but that, I don't have a first generation. I have that second batch. I didn't get mine until Mario Kart came out. So I didn't get a first run. I got like a second or third run, whatever. So I'm pretty much good there. But no, yeah, I've had the drift a couple times. I've had that happen for sure. So any other thoughts? What's your legal analysis of the situation here?
My legal analysis of the situation.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't think they can legitimately be on the hook for all of it.
Oh, no.
But I think it'll probably end up being a discount or something like that. Replace a Joy-Con for X amount or something like that.
Sure. Do you know anyone who sent it back to Nintendo and get fixed? Has anyone done that, you know? For Drift?
When the Switch first came out, someone I know did send it out for... not for Drift, to get the repair done for Disconnect, but okay. Not for Drift, no.
Okay. Is there any kits you can buy yourself to replace the analog, or is
I haven't looked into it. I know Vani has Drift issues, though.
It's probably something on the board, I'm guessing, then, more so than the actual joystick.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Google Stadia had an AMA recently where it came out and bravely, courageously said, "We are not a Netflix for games." So Google Stadia... is the game streaming service that Google is coming out with.
Mm-hmm.
It requires the use of a Chromecast and a special controller, a Google Stadia controller. And they are promising that it will be offering 4K HDR streaming, 5.1 sound, exclusive discounts. This is if you do the Pro version. Pro gets 4K HDR streaming, 5.1 sound, exclusive discounts, and access to some free games. One free game a month, thereabouts. Destiny 2 is what it's starting. But people have had some concerns about Stadia since it came out. One is the absolute huge amount of bandwidth that this service is going to use. They were talking about how it would burn through terabytes within a couple of days. So people started to talk about it. And people are... One of the things that people brought up first in this AMA, not even so much the download speeds, but Google has a bad history of releasing products and then just leaving them to die.
Let's see. Google Plus, that crashed and burned almost immediately. They cut that off. What else?
So
we got here?
You've got Chromecast audio removed. YouTube annotations abandoned. Louisville, Kentucky's fiber installation dropped. IoT support from Android Things gutted its laptop and tablet division. Shut down Google Allo. Closed its Spotlight Stories VR studio. Stopped accepting new users for the Google URL shortener. Shut down IFTT support. And ended both Google Plus and Google Inbox.
Okay.
This is from the extremetech.com article on the AMA. There's a Google cemetery that lists 155 projects that Google has killed, as well as some statistics on its behavior. I think this is something that people, or maybe people have, but I didn't notice, haven't really focused on with Stadia, that I think is definitely worth looking at now that it's put in front of me. If this comes out and it doesn't do very well, what's the likelihood of Google sticking around to support this? They say they have to, or they say they will. They mention in this article that essentially this is just how, like, music and, you know, movies move to, you know, a digital streaming medium. And they're trying to say that this is just natural progression. I mean, it almost sounds like they're saying it will work. It has no chance of failing because this is where it needs to go. But they're not the same. It's movies, and music are not the same.
And it's not Netflix for games because you have to buy games still.
Right, exactly.
So it's $10 per month for the regular one. And the controller is $69.
Yes.
And you have to have that controller.
$79 controller, a $70 controller that you have to have.
And it's just a generic same controller that you can get anywhere else, but it's a Google
one. And then a Chromecast. And the Chromecast is $70, so that's $140. And then
that's not built into some TVs, the Chromecast?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, if it isn't.
Or something.
I'm just going off of what they say you need.
Okay, so that's $150 about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me see what TVs have it built in. Some have it built in. Some TVs do have it built in. Okay. Android TVs. Made by Sony, Philips, and Sharp come with Chromecast built in. Okay. So some TVs have or if they're Android TVs, I think the one I have is an Android TV.
Okay.
So that'll have that. So you're set there at least. But you still got to buy a $70 controller.
Yes. So that's your entry. That's your entry level to buying into the Stadia system. They still want you to have something you need to buy, obviously, to be able to use their service.
They want money back from the start. And the markup on those controllers is insane.
Sure.
For a $70 controller, the markup is probably like 300%, you want to say. So the one thing that's interesting that, and we really haven't talked about Google Stadia that much before, the reason that this is different than, you know, the Xbox Gold or, you know, PlayStation, whatever else, is that with other services, when you buy a game, you can download it. You download the game. You're not downloading games with this. They're all in the cloud.
Right.
So the amount of bandwidth can be exponential. I don't know how much bandwidth is being used by this stuff, but when you download something from PlayStation, from their store, that's all the bandwidth you need for that game, obviously, versus getting an update. If I download Red Dead 4, that's it. It doesn't have to download or be constantly chewing up data as I play, just to play, you know, that experience versus streaming it. You're streaming the games here.
Right.
That's different. So when you take data plans into account, does your area have a data plan that's strong enough to support this? You know, and is there a cap on your bandwidth?
Well, it doesn't matter because Google had the balls to come out and say this during the AMA. Google thinks ISPs will raise data caps to allow services like Stadia to function without eating all of your bandwidth.
They think they will.
There will be some unspecified tools and services for bandwidth management. Dronachev writes, there's a lot of great ISPs offering plans with hundreds of megabytes per second or even gigabits in no caps. And then the guy goes on to say, which is really cute considering roughly 40% of the country, including myself, have access to exactly one ISP.
I have fiber optic, and I have a data cap. It's not unlimited. They don't want you chewing that up. There's no incentive for Cox Cable or AT&T. That's two of our local ones, Ian. We have a little bit of choice for that, depending on where you live. I have a choice of those two, maybe a third. There's no incentive for an ISP, internet service provider, to have an unlimited cap. Why would they do that? That's money to them.
Sure.
How would Google incentivize them to have a cap? You know what I mean? Like, all you need is like the major metropolitan areas to not have an unlimited bandwidth. That's first of all, that's cheap enough. because the cost of fiber optic unlimited, which would probably be the best thing, even fiber optic limited, that's, I think I pay $100 a month plus just for internet. Mm-hmm. Not everyone can afford that to begin with. So a lot of people have, like, you know, the $20-$40 plans that are good enough for most things. So there's a lot of obstacles in the way before you can even have this viable for a lot of people even think about, before you even get down to the value proposition of, will this be worth it where I pay $10 a month and I still, and for whatever, is that for one or two free games or some free games at launch, and I still have to buy the most popular games probably that are coming out.
Yeah, it's a free game a month. So it started Destiny 2. And we still haven't seen how well it works, and Google, throughout this entire AMA, was unwilling to give a minimum amount of time that they would support it. So they won't even say, we guarantee its support for a year.
So can we say this is dead in the water?
I feel like it's dead in the water.
I mean, the Apple...
I can't see how anyone would... I don't know where the appeal is to anyone. Usually with most bad ideas, I can see the appeal somewhere. I don't see the appeal here.
Even the Apple one offers more than this. The Apple Arcade one's going to
Apple. Apple one offers download. So it's barely similar. Once you add download into it, it's whatever.
But that's better, at least.
That's what I'm saying. Once you add download into it, then it's a completely different beast. This is ridiculous. So
The market's not big enough to support, you know, three different major gaming companies, and now you have two major streaming / whatever subscription gaming services on top of that. It's just too much. Honestly, the Apple one, you have a lot of equity built up just from people that like Apple that will say, oh, I can play on my, Apple TV, and also I can play them on my phone and on my tablet. So there's an ecosystem built up for Apple
users. People won't have
to
go out looking for the Apple thing. If you have an iPhone, which lots of people do and lots of people continue to buy, Apple's going to find a way to introduce them to their subscription service, and it's going to come to... The customers are going to come to them.
Yeah, and plus...
This is something you have to seek out.
And plus it has the mobile advantage where, oh, I can play some mobile games as well. And that Google's not offering that from what I can see.
And I'm still just trying to see why they think this market needs to be here. You don't own the games. You pay monthly for one free game. You still have to buy the games, even though you don't own them. There's no guarantee that it's going to play smoothly or cleanly. You need internet access to play any of these games. I don't see one single thing about Google Stadia. I mean, if I'm missing something, please point it out to me. I mean, that legitimately, what is supposed to be the hook?
And you're missing something that's bad. That if I pay $60 for a game that I have to stream, what happens when the servers go down?
Well,
in two, three years?
Feel like we just all assume, we had already.
But I mean,
just
like, let's explicitly say that. We're not even worried about the games that, oh, you lose the free games, whatever. Let's just say I bought four games for $240 total over a couple years.
Google decides this is a bad idea
and they pull
in
the
less
plug.
Than a year.
Do I get a credit back for those games?
They did not answer any of that. that was asked, but they did not answer.
What a disaster. I'm glad we waited to talk about this. Now we have more of the details, and it spells disaster, as Scott Steiner would say, when you do the math.
Yes, when you do the math.
It has a 33.1% chance of succeeding, but I got a 66% chance of winning because I'm a genetic freak. All right, so Google Stadia, when is this going to launch again? Is this later this year? When is this thing launching? Do we care at this point?
No.
We don't care. The CU Podcast is proud to be working with NordVPN. That's what I use to keep myself safe online, and you can too if you care about the privacy and security of your info. NordVPN is giving you 66% off a 2-year plan when you go to nordvpn.com/CU Podcast or use code CU Podcast at checkout.
VPN stands for Virtual Private Network, and today having a VPN is more critical than ever. Why? If you're doing anything online, your information and browsing habits are out there for anyone to get a hold of. When you use NordVPN, you have access to over 4,000 super speedy servers in 62 countries, and those connections secure your information using military-grade encryption. That means your information and what you do online is nearly impossible to track.
They have an app for Android phones, for your Apple phones, your iPhones, laptop, PCs, what have you. You can connect up to 6 devices with one account. The folks at PC Mag made NordVPN their editor's top VPN choice. Unlimited bandwidth and a money-back guarantee. Again, get that special offer, 66% off a two-year plan. Go to nordvpn.com/CU podcast or use code CU podcast and get going with your secure web browsing. Ian.
Yes.
You know, we like talking about gambling in video games.
Sure.
Via loot boxes or opening up FIFA card packs and seeing what shiny player you get for your team, or now it's in the basketball games.
I've opened almost an entire box of 1991 WCW cards.
Oh, is that gambling? Would you consider that gambling or no?
I considered it $18 well spent.
You think that was at Comic-Con?
Yes.
at the good old non-sports card booth? Every year, I almost buy the Nintendo tattoos every year.
No, they're gone now.
But then Frank Cifaldi said they're all damaged anyway because of the gum. Ruined all those tattoos, so you can't even use them.
Well, so, there's some other that you could use. They're all crap tattoos anyway. They're not like the traditional like tattoos. They look at like the fruit stripe gum tattoos. It's essentially just a heavily, heavily ink saturated piece of paper. So if you put it on something wet, the ink comes off.
The point is, it sounds like they're all destroyed at this point inside the packs.
So, most
of them.
Most.
Well, Ian, we got off topic. We like talking about gambling in video games, whether it's opening up virtual card packs or loot boxes. But GTA Online has been talking about for years now opening a casino in their virtual playland.
Well, they had a casino up there, and no one knew what was going to happen with it or what it was supposed to do. It sat there for years, and it turns out that it's open as of today. It was likely going to be part of single-player content that was added that they never did because Grand Theft Auto Online got so popular.
It's the Diamond Casino in Vinewood. You can play blackjack, poker, roulette. You can do horse betting.
So it's an online casino. You can use it to, you can go in and you can buy chips. You can use buy chips with your in-game currency, which, of course, you can also increase by real...
What?
You can increase in-game currency with real money.
You can buy in-game currency with real-life currency to use at a gambling casino?
You can then use that money to buy chips at a casino, yes. So basically, they're trying to hide it under as many layers as possible.
So to start gambling, you'll need to. This is from a PC Gamer. You need to exchange cash for chips at cashier services. Though you'll also get $5,000 right away for getting membership at the casino. This costs $500 of in-game currency. You'll also get free chips each day. The exchange rate is one chip for $1 of in-game currency. So you can only buy. This is funny. You can only buy 50,000 chips at a time before a cooldown timer occurs. 50,000 chips. That's 50,000 of in-game currency money. So they don't want you to go off and just, buy, millions of whatever you built up. I don't know how long it takes to build up money through playing this game. I have no idea. But I do know this. People are going to lose a lot of their in-game currency via this gambling.
Oh, sure.
They're incentivized. You know why, Ian? Because you can also buy a penthouse in the Diamond Casino to hang out with your friends, and virtually just, there's a spa in this, bedrooms, a private bar, a media room, and an office that you can customize. And it costs you an in-game currency, ready? 63,548,081 of in-game currency. That people will be incentivized to gamble for
to get
in
what?
This game. To get the penthouse.
Okay. Well,
and I'm sure that's just the start of it. I'm sure there'll be other things you can buy in the casino.
Not on sale. You can get... Hold on here. So there are shark cards. Shark cards are how you load up your Grand Theft Auto Online account with the monies. To the biggest one you can get is the Megalodon shark, which of course gives you, and of course, much like any time you're buying into something in a game, you can buy the minimum amount, or if you buy more at once, you get it for a discount.
Buy more and save.
So it looks like the cheapest way to get your in-game currency is the Megalodon shark card, which is $100 US and gives you 8 million in-game currency.
Okay. So how many people are just going to say, screw it, I'm just going to buy in real-time cash to get that penthouse and spend, Pat, math, you said $8 million for $100?
$8 million for $100.
So 63 divided by 8 equals... So it roughly costs you $800 in real cash to get to buy the currency to get that penthouse.
Jesus Christ.
That's $790.
It's wild.
To get it. Do you think people at least partially will do that versus building up the cash to get it? I'm sure in the game it's not that easy to get $63 million.
I'm sure someone out there has already done it because they have too much
grinding
money to burn.
But
no, I'm sure someone out there, I mean, it started today.
Someone already
has gone out and bought the...
bought it.
Yeah. I'm sure it's out there.
You're buying virtual real estate in a casino, and then you can go downstairs and play poker. We can horse bet virtually. We could play slots. You know, I just think it's amazing, Ian, because they're not even trying to be subtle with this now about you are gambling in the game, which is fine. But the fact that they give you the option to buy the currency that you could potentially use to gamble with, like, there's not even a separation anymore.
Sure,
there's not even a degree of separation here.
Right.
The only thing you can't do is then, like, recash out your in-game currency for money.
You can't convert
If it was legal, they would have done that.
Yes, probably.
Because then it would just be online gambling wholesale. Like, there would be... This is barely separation. That's, like, the next final frontier, I think, or something like this. Do you think they would allow you to do that if they could?
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah, why not? We're not just running an online gambling operation via a video game.
Of course they would.
I mean, what else can you say? Like, they are just inviting, oversight, government oversight. They're saying,
they are
come into
it,
our,
yes. come
on into our casino. Here's a drink. And now you're going to shut this down.
Come in and look at all the games.
You don't think when they start having up on Capitol Hill, when they start having talks about this, that this is not going to be one of the prime examples they're going to be using?
Oh, I'm sure they will.
To say, like, they're not even trying to pretend that this is enticing people via gambling, via... you know, sparkly lights and things that scientifically they used in order to get you to gamble on a slot machine and having those sounds and everything to keep you engaged. It's a casino!
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's fun, though. But it's a casino!
Sure!
Like, can I throw away some money playing craps and then they get me a virtual buffet for my time that I've wasted all this money? I mean, I'm trying to think of a way to spin this positively. There.
Who doesn't love a virtual buffet?
Virtual buffet. You get your free steak card. You ever go to a Vegas buffet? You get you like the one steak, the one good steak. They give you the card for it.
No, nope.
They give you a little because they don't want you eating 8 steaks. So put them out of business. You get the one steak. Here's your steak slip. And you get your steak. You get your prime rib or your steak, whatever. You can do that. All right, cool. Absolutely awesome. $63,500,000 for to get everything in the DLC. The DLC of the penthouse and everything else and whatever else. So, okay. Twitch Prime subscribers who connected their Rockstar Social Club accounts before the 19th get $1.5 million off any penthouse.
Oh, nice.
So you can pick up the most basic one for free. Okay, so $63 million is to get the biggest one with all the bells and whistles. There are cheaper ones.
I see. Okay.
The fact remains, though, Ian, that there are people that want everything in that penthouse.
Oh, yeah.
They want the stripper pole. They want the jacuzzi. They want everything. Is there a stripper pole?
Probably.
Can you hire hookers for your penthouse? I'm guessing you can. It's GTA.
Most likely. Probably
do that. All right. Anything else to add to this?
Nah, it's just weird.
This is peak video game loot boxing and gambling here. All right. Ian.
Patrick.
We got a small Polymega update. We haven't really discussed a lot about this because, honestly, at this point, we just like this thing to come out and be on the market for us to actually talk about this versus hypotheticals. So the Polymega, as if you didn't know, it's a modular retro game system based off of emulation, where you buy the core unit for, I think it's $300, that has the CD disc based system with a handful of emulators for like Sega Saturn and Sony PlayStation, TurboGrafx CD, etc., Sega CD, and then you buy the modules to snap on to there to play Super Nintendo or Sega Genesis or NES, things like that. So the TurboGrafx 16 /PC Engine module, called the Turbo Element module set. It's Turbo. It's the Element module set, but it's Turbo is the name.
Oh, okay.
So it's been announced that's going to include some games with it. So built-in games, as I guess the other systems have as well. I guess they're licensing out some games here and there.
So we've got Double Dungeons, Shockman, Moto Rotor, Moto Rotor 2, and Dragon Egg coming with it. It's a kind of a weird lineup, especially since if you could get Shockman, you could probably get Shockman 2. There's no English version of that, though. That is Shockman 2. Anyways, there's better versions of Shockman. That's right, that is Shibibin Man 2. Moto Rotor is fun. Dragon Egg is great. Never got a U.S. release.
Never
it's
played
a fantastic
it.
Game.
What type of game is that? Is it a platformer?
Yeah,
or is it
yeah,
action platformer?
Okay. I don't know. Weird choices. It was like they got this library offered to them, and they said, okay, here, we're going to take it. These are not exactly like iconic turbo games.
No, these aren't system sellers, I would say, based upon it. Like Moto Rotor, if you like it, I remember playing it once. That was an early racing game, overhead, right? Racing game. Double Dungeons. That's a dungeon crawler for two players.
It's a first-person dungeon crawler, but it can actually split-screen and be
that's
played
right.
by two people.
That can go independently.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
So it's interesting. So it's a little bonus here. So this is going to cost $60 for the module. Keep in mind, for the base unit, like I said, it's $300 if you didn't get, I think, the early bird by now. So... what do you think about them even including these? Obviously, it's cool to have a bonus, but obviously no one's going to buy these just for the packing games. They're not iconic enough.
Yeah, I don't think they are. I mean, any sort of bonus is nice.
Sure.
I'll try to be as realistic as I can here, as reasonable as I can, because sometimes I can get crabby.
No, not us. Not you.
Any sort of bonus is nice. I don't mind the Moto Rotor games. Double Dungeons is neat for what it is. It's just, it's not very good. It's just, it's there. Shockman is fun, and Dragon Egg is great. So these are good games, and those are, two of those are kind of like well-known deep cuts on the library. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like there was rhyme or reason to picking them. What do they have on the other modules?
Okay, I'll look, Ian. I wish I was prepared. Let's check them out. Pre-order, let's see, go to the pre-order view bundle. The website's a little weird to navigate here. Let's check the Super Set. Let's check the Genesis Set, and we'll check that. You have to go to the pre-order page and scroll down here. You get, on the SNES one, you get Dragon View, North American version, Legend, Gourmet Warriors, which didn't come out here, but I guess they got a translated version. That's a beat-em-up. Pushover, the PAL version. Super Draken, Japanese version. Top Gear 2, the Japanese version. Not sure why it went into the North American one. And then you also get the Japanese version of Gourmet Warriors.
Weird. Okay.
So you get... That's six games? Six games. One, two, three. Yeah, it's six games.
Okay.
It's a weird selection of stuff.
It is. And I actually like Dragon View and Draken, but that's a...
That's kind of a weird eclectic...
Yeah.
Mix of, I guess, stuff they can get the license to. Cheap.
Right.
The Genesis bundle, the Power module. Oh, no, that's the NES one. It's Power. Okay, the names are screwing me up. You get Eight Eyes. We love playing Eight Eyes on the Marathon. Nightshade. Target Renegade. It's not terrible, but okay. Power Punch 2. Closer to terrible, but it's all right. And then Treasure Master. If that isn't the most wily group of NES games you've ever heard, how did we not cover this before? Can you think of a weirder list of games that are all entirely different and aren't on anyone's, like, I gotta play them NES list than that?
Treasure
and those aren't all, like I said, Target Renegade's not terrible. I like Eight Eyes for what it is. Nightshade's goofy if you get into it. It's fun. That's just the weirdest list I ever saw. And then Power Punch 2?
Power Punch 2 is absolute trash, and fucking, what was the last one?
Treasure Master.
Treasure Master is just unplayable.
It's just a goofy platformer. I mean, you can play it.
Sure.
But it's just, that's a weird list. Now, okay, here's the Mega module. This is the Genesis ones. All ready?
Uh-huh.
All right. I don't know what some of these are. I only know what a couple of these are. Tin Head.
Yeah.
Top Racer 2, Japanese version.
Don't know.
Sword of Sodan. There we go.
Yeah.
EA rough classic, but I like it because it's bloody and goofy. It was a PC game as well, I believe. Brave Battle Saga: Legend of the Magic Warrior. No. And then Water Margin. It's a funny name. Water Margin, A Tale of Clouds and Wind, North American version. I guess these are translated Japanese games. I've never heard of these games.
Water Margin?
Water Margin, A Tale... That has to be a translated title. Water Margin, A Tale of Clouds and Winds. If that's not an RPG, what is that? What is that? You're studying the water supply of a city somewhere?
Water Margin.
It's on Steam.
The Tale of Clouds
for $10.
And Winds. It's a beat 'em up.
Oh, it's a beat 'em up. Okay. Okay, that's a list. And then, yeah. So we have the Super one, the Genesis one, NES one, and then the Turbo one. We have the five.
It looks like the Water Margin is like a homebrew.
It's a homebrew. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I never heard of that North American version. Okay. So I'm still tentatively excited for a disc system. The modules, I don't know about the modules, I'll be honest. If the disc system comes out and gets good reviews, we'll see. I think $300 is pricey, though, for that, being that, you know, these FPGA consoles are $200, you know, and that's FPGA.
Yeah, I think it's a bit much.
It's a bit much. If it was $200, it would be closer to leaning towards yes. I'm leaning towards no at $300. And I just want this to come out, because we still don't know if this is going to come out until it's out. So come out, and then we can talk about it for sure. Now we're just advertising for free. Basically.
Yep. All right. Done with it.
All right. What's next?
Give me 1 second. My internet crashed.
All right. Well, Ian.
Yes.
The next topic we don't need the internet for.
Oh.
Necessarily. So, literally yesterday before the podcast last night, we put up the podcast topic on YouTube. You know this is an audio podcast as well, YouTubers out there, YouTube fans. We talked about the $22,000 auction for Super Mario Brothers. The original initial sticker seal release.
Yes.
So there I am at Comic-Con, walking around on, this was on Saturday morning, walking around. And there's, you know, my favorite part of Comic-Con, besides the comics, if you go north of the comics, it are like, you know, you have a few toy aisles, you have some artists selling little...
You mean like the back
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You have people that make little, I bought a little plush, little quilted little kitty cat, was cute, little mocha colored cat, was adorable. And then, you know, some toy people. And then every once in a while, those toy people, I'd say, like, it's usually like a handful will have some retro games out there. Last year, someone had like a bunch of NES games in like these sealed cellophane packs, just the cartridges. It was weird to see that. They had them like almost like blister packed. It was weird. So I always look for like G.I. Joes, and I still look for He-Man figures. I love looking for that stuff with Pixel Dan. I found that my favorite thing I didn't buy, I should have, was the Pac-In Karate Kid referee with the mustache from the... They had the playset, the tournament playset.
Nice.
And no one had Karate Kid figures. They were hard to find. They were, I think, Remco figures who made Rambo figures and like the AWA figures. They were like not widely distributed as much as the other ones. You know, they weren't like G.I. Joes. But anyway, so I like looking for this stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't like buying toys just because I have no room for even the games and all the shit's in the garage.
Right.
But eventually I'd like to display some of it, especially G.I. Joe stuff. So one seller I looked down, and it's a seller that I think I bought almost every year at least something from. They had some NES games. And I just noticed it just because I think the day before I looked, they weren't there. It was like a shoebox of about 20 games, Super Nintendo, NES. I noticed there was a Monopoly in the box sitting there. But then I looked up and I noticed a kid about 21, 22 was holding a game. He was holding the Super Mario Brothers in the box. So I'm like, that's not a big deal. But then I looked and I squinted and I saw in the front, I saw, you know, the little sticky residue on the front. And I'm like... That's a sticker seal Super Mario Brothers. So I'm looking at it, I'm like, that's potentially the first release, because they had a second release with a different color sticker, whatever. It doesn't matter. So I'm looking at it, I'm like, I think that's a Super Mario Brothers. And there was a sticker on it for $40, a green sticker.
Mm-hmm.
So he looked at it, he was just looking at it, he probably was looking at it more of curiosity. Oh, this is original Super Mario Brothers. Like, I'm 20 years old, I didn't grow up with this. This is interesting. He put it down, and I'm like, I pick it up, and I'm like, and I look at the back of it, and I'm like, oh, this is the first release. So, yeah, it's beat up, but at Comic-Con, Pat got an original release, Super Mario Brothers. And the ways you can tell is that, yeah, there's a sticker. You see, it's all curled up in the top here, the sticker. Mm-hmm. There's a sticker. There's a sticker residue, obviously. There's a hang tab. They actually put a plastic one, of the, you know, they hung it up like, probably like KB Toy Store or Kitty City. The one way you can tell, Ian, usually here it'll say like Game Pack, you know, Super Mario Brothers would be like a code here.
Yeah.
The first release doesn't have that under the red Nintendo. Uh-huh. That's how you tell for sure. So Pat picked up a beat up copy of something that auctioned for $22,000 a week or two ago. Now, this is, again, this isn't a good condition. This has been tenderly cared for and loved. This is like a 2.5 out of 10. This is not a 6.0. But it's interesting just because, like I said, this stuff is, while this stuff is harder to find, this isn't like extremely rare stuff. This isn't like a stadium events. This isn't like an NWC gold. You can still find this stuff out there. This is a box that most people threw out, and they probably didn't make... If they want to say they made more than 10,000 of these or 15,000, probably not for the test market, you know, because they'd only made like 100,000 NES consoles right. for that test market. So they wouldn't have made even 50,000 Super Mario Brothers. They probably made as many Clue Lands, Ian, for the test version. So I'm going to hold on to it because I thought I had it at one point. And honestly, Ian, over the past 20 years of collecting, I've had multiple Super Mario Brothers in the boxes, and I might have had one in so long because I thought it was beat up. It's a possibility. The ones I have on the shelf, I have the second release, which, again, is the same exact hang tab, no sticker seal, though, and that's in great condition. And I had the third release, which is the one most people had, where that's when they went to a 3-screw, and they got rid of the hang tab. So I have those on the shelf over there, so now I got the first release, so I'm happy about that. It's part of gaming history, I guess, in a way. You know, pump up the importance, and 30 years, pack and sell it for my midlife crisis car, which I'll be actually midlife is coming soon. If I'm going to be dead at 70, I'm past midlife at this point or at it. But I might hit 70.
We'll see.
So any thoughts? Ian, I know you don't do finds like this. I mean, usually the one that's I don't find Dinosaur Peaks at the swap meet. I don't find extremely rare stuff usually.
It's not to be mean. I feel nothing about this.
Your heart's just like whatever. It's fine. What would you sell it at Luna for? $50? Would you even put a higher value on it in this market or no?
I have no idea. I'd have to look at it because it's stupid to let people take advantage of you by buying it way under and then flipping. But I don't... I don't care about collecting
you don't
video
care?
Games anymore. It's neat.
It's neat because it's the first one. And that's... The funny thing about it was... It was a 3-screw inside of it, so obviously someone pieced it together at some point. But I have the 5. I had the 5-screw in another box.
Why'd you admit that it's not 100% authentic? You're ruined.
They're not matched up, Ian, like serial codes.
No shit.
The manual was in pretty good shape.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. But anyway, so I just think it's funny. By the way, the NES card, the 3-screw was in there, had like an H in the bottom right. It was almost like a rental or something. It was like an eight, little H square sticker. It was weird. But anyway, that wasn't the proper... The 3-screw wasn't until, like, 87 for that. But anyway, so I guarantee you, Ian, I'm going to get, like, at least one email probably offering to buy it. Because, again, they're building up that market that, well, if it went sealed for 100 grand, and I think the one that went for 100 grand was actually the second sticker, not the first one. I went back and looked. It sells a bit later. So if that went for 100 grand, then, you know, and then a 6.0 went for 22 grand, they're trying to establish a market in each sort of, you know, degree.
At each level.
For this is like, if this is like a 2.5 or 3, this will be whatever you say it is. But I guarantee you, I could have walked over and sold this to one of the people there. They would have taken it on. Or I could have consigned it to Heritage Auctions right there. If it was graded. I'd have to get it graded first.
Right.
Should I get it graded, Ian, or no? Should I just go old school and not grade it?
I mean, I would...
Just keep it?
I would keep it and then get rid of it when you get rid of all the other stuff you have too much of.
But I want to keep my Super Mario Brothers.
Keep that.
This is going to be the Action Comics, they say, of video games. Action Comics number one. Okay.
You're an Action Comic.
Would you have bought this if you saw it? If you noticed it? Or no, you don't care?
No, I would not have bought it.
You really wouldn't have? Well, even the potentially flip it for several thousand dollars, you wouldn't have done that? Maybe.
I mean, maybe.
You got some student loans.
But at the same point in time, I don't know that I would have noticed.
Oh, you don't think you would have noticed what he said? No. Oh, it's just a black box game. Black box game. It's interesting. Like I said, I haven't had a find like that in... what's the last time I had a find like that where I found something hard to find? It doesn't happen to me. Trust me. Most of my games I paid a lot for, like the hard to find ones. I didn't find my Magical Chase for $20 or $10. That happens to my friends. Oh, yeah, I got Little Sam's at the swap meet for $10 with the manual. No, that never happened to me. It happened to other people I knew. Pat never got lucky on that stuff. I guess I deserve a win every now and then. Why not? All right, Ian.
Patreon.
How do you access the Patreon?
Patreon.com/CU podcast. Yeah, did I do it? Okay, that is right. I thought it was wrong.
Wow.
Patreon.com/CU podcast. And you can check out all of the things that we offer. We will dance for you.
We'll dance?
We'll dance for money. You are our patrons. And we will do the things you ask. We'll do the things that you sign up for.
Ian's got to write a summary up of Comic-Con.
I have
Wait
to
on
do
that,
a
buddy.
Comic-Con summary. We'll do that as soon as I get out of here today.
So the Patreon poll topic of the week, which you can vote on. In third place, what would your ideal game collection consist of if price was no object? Again, 19%, almost neck and neck at 21%. When will GameStop stop accepting PS3, 360, Wii and Wii U games, systems for trade? 21%. These actually aren't bad topics. But the past couple of weeks, they've been very personal topics that have been chosen. That at number one at 60%, and I put this in because it was on Twitter, and that was interesting. Is Pat still a gamer if he generally doesn't play video games for fun anymore? Ian, is Pat still a gamer if I generally don't play video games for fun anymore?
I mean, to the letter, yes, I guess. To the spirit, no.
What is the spirit of being a gamer? What's the spirit of being a gamer, Ian?
Playing them for fun.
You don't think I've played games for fun the past year? Even for the book, it wasn't fun to play F-Zero or play on Super
Mario
World. It might
have been, but whenever I suggest you play games for fun, you say you have no time. So forgive me for thinking you never play games for fun and only for work.
Well, it can be both, though. Like, if I'm playing Super Mario Kart for a review book, or if I'm playing Super Mario All-Stars and streaming it, but I'm still, you know, doing it because it has to go in the book. Well, that's fun.
Then just tell the people right here, right now, do you still play games for fun?
Yeah, I do.
There you go.
It's fun.
There you go. You don't always have to say that every game you play is a chore or it's for work.
I don't say every game I play is a chore. I don't say that. I don't say that,
Then you play games for fun. That's what I need to say. But you need to project that onto people.
Okay.
People get the impression that you play video games because you hate them.
Whoa, wait a second, Ian. That's you projecting your thoughts on other people's projections.
Actually, it's just called exaggeration.
Okay. Why would I play games because I hate them?
No, people think you. People don't think you
Who's
play
the people?
Games for fun anymore.
Who's the people?
The people out there. The people who talk to you. The people who get at you in the comment section. You always complain when you're playing games, so talk about playing games for fun. Talk about a game you played recently that you had a great time with that wasn't for work.
All right, I'll let you know when I get to that.
Yeah, okay. So, yes, you're still a gamer, I guess.
I am a gamer. Well, Ian's turning this to
be a gamer.
Ian's turning this to the Let's Harangue Pat segment of the podcast. And I was trying to answer an innocent question.
And I'm just saying people would think that you played games for fun if you sometimes mention that you played games for fun.
I have played games for fun, though.
Okay.
I bring up my old war stories of playing Unreal Tournament and things of that nature.
We're talking about modern times.
That's modern times.
No,
2007.
It's not. No, that's 20 years ago.
That's 10 years ago.
Okay.
My competitive Unreal days probably ended like 2008.
2008?
Yeah, before I moved. I was playing,
I thought you were here already.
2009. I came here.
2009.
I've stopped playing Unreal Tournament in 2009. Mm. I played it, I think, when I first moved here. I played a little bit. I was like, my job was killing me when I moved here. So I stopped doing it there.
It was murdering you.
It was murdering me.
It was murdering.
I should have murdered people that I worked with. Anyway, I'm a gamer still. That's like, to me, that's weird. It's like saying, are you an athlete if you don't like the sport you're playing? It's like, yeah, you're still an athlete. Are you still a martial artist if you're not enjoying, the training sessions and getting beat up by people? Yeah, you're still a martial artist. Absolutely. That's kind of a weird semantical question. Semantical.
It's weird that anyone cares.
And even if I didn't, let's put it this way. Even if I didn't enjoy playing the games, the service that's being provided over the millennium via a certain NES guidebook and having a resource guide is well worth my... I'm sacrificing from you. So don't worry about my enjoyment. Generations down the line will get the enjoyment of learning about a game such as Wally Bear and the No Game they wouldn't have heard of. You know,
game?
Wally Bear and the No Game that gets written about. Or a game like, I don't know... what was that Super Mario Kart ripoff on the Super Nintendo? I should know that, but I didn't review it.
It's not Speed Racer. It's a Street Racer.
Street Racer, exactly. So the generations have to know about that. So let Pat suffer. I will be the martyr for you all for the future. You can say, thank you, Pat. Thank you, Pat, for not enjoying playing these games if you want to do that. All right. That's the Patreon poll topic. Patreon.com/CU podcast. All right.
Street Racer doesn't look the worst.
No, it's not bad. It's not bad at all. It's funny.
I've only seen the PlayStation version, which I guess is more or less the same.
Q&A time on the CU podcast. This is from at Sandino Net. What was the first online game you played? And detail in your thoughts from your experience, your online friends, community, etc. Ian, what was the first online game you played?
So after thinking about it, I think it really does go all the way back to, because I'm pretty sure this would have been before Doom, original Doom. Sierra used to have an online
network.
An online network.
They call it the, I think it's Sierra Online Network.
I think it was
they?
Just Sierra. Yeah, I think yeah. it was just Sierra Online
Sierra
Network.
Sierra Online.
So for those who, I guess, you know, always grew up with okay. the, for those who always grew up with the internet back, you know, back in the early 90s, late 80s and early 90s.
Sierra Network.
There okay. were, you know, it wasn't like you just joined the internet. You could go through AOL, you could go through Prodigy, you could go through CompuServe. There was all of these little,
there were hubs.
Services, hubs that you could sign up for,
yes.
and they had their own self-contained usernames and profiles, and they had
their own little forums and little
forms, chat rooms.
Basically,
they were very yeah. unique.
It was like they were like libraries. They had like little areas. Oh, here's the sports stuff. Here's
right.
the
and there was people who wrote know. For them, and you yeah. know it was odd. They were
here's
very,
the hobby section.
They were very self-contained, but the Sierra Network. Was one run by Sierra Games, the creator of all those like point-and-click adventure games, King's Quest series, all of that stuff. And it actually had games that you could play with other people.
Huh.
With other people. So I remember playing like a little like reversey type game, but it looked like fancy. You know, it was like, you know, funny graphics. The faces were like silly, but it was like Othello, essentially. You could play Red Baron. Online, the
okay.
flight sim. You could play Red Baron
now,
online.
That was a free game included with the network.
Yes, that was included.
I do remember
the,
that.
That was
so,
included with the
so
network.
Real quick,
there was a lot of little games that were included
okay.
with the network. So essentially, it was like an AOL, but there was all sorts of games you could play with people.
Was that when they became the Imagination Network? They had the Red Barons. I remember the advertisements for that.
Yeah. Yep. Imagination
so they became
network.
The Imagination Network after they were bought, and then according to Wikipedia, that was '94.
Okay.
Before that, they were just the Sierra Sierra. Network. Then they became the Imagination Network, and that's when they started. Like they would start including when you bought a Sierra game, they would include like the little disc for
yep.
it, right?
Yeah.
That's okay. Now I remember that. So we're talking like mid-90s was when you had this, like 94, 95 ish around there.
Yeah, but that's not even true because I remember I played
you had it before
like,
that.
Okay. I played one of those MUDs or whatever it was on one of my dad's BBSs.
Okay, so that going back before
that's
that.
Like so like late '80s. So I mean, I guess if you really just like
that, was that ASCII?
Yeah, that was ASCII. That
so
was
you
all ASCII.
ASCII dungeon games and stuff like that.
So yeah, that's about it though.
Was
so
there,
right
so
around there, it's like it was that sort of stuff. The you know the MUDs, Imagination and Sierra Network and Doom had to have come out somewhere in there. And I definitely played Doom online.
Doom was 93.
Okay, then Doom might have Doom. It probably went BBS's. Then it probably went Doom. Then it probably went Sierra. But I was just trying to think of the first thing that jumped into my mind.
So do you remember any community or any friends you would play with that regularly in any of this stuff? Or no, it was just random people?
It was just whatever BBSs my dad was on in,
gotcha.
You know, Western New York.
Oh, I'm a rich kid had BBSs in the 80s. Okay. All right. So I didn't get the internet until 93 or 94 we got AOL. Around there. I think it was before high school. So I want to say 93. Because by that point, we had bought the CD-ROM drive, the Sound Blaster 16 pack, which had the Sound Blaster 16 card, which was one up from the regular Sound Blaster card.
Yep.
It was like the medium-level Sound Blaster card. And then it had the CD-ROM with it. And then it had all like the you know Iron Helix and Dennis Miller's That's Geek to Me disc and all these games. It had the MicroProse 4-pack, which had Civilization sitting there, which I didn't play for 2 years, unfortunately, because I'm dumb and didn't realize what that was at the time, and Stealth Fighter. So we got that around 90, I want to say early 93, late 92, we got that. By 92, we got that. That's when we got our first new, not even Pentium, our 486 33. Wasn't even a Pentium. Pentium was like the two levels above what we had. So my dad got the bare bones. So we got AOL, which gave you online access as well, obviously. And then I did play a little bit of Doom. I do remember Doom. I don't know who I connected to.
It's just a host modem, like dial, direct dial.
It must have been, honestly, it was probably talking to my friend on the phone. Like, oh, let's connect. Like, connected their number, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
yeah,
what we did?
You could literally just call.
I think that's what we did. Otherwise, yeah, there was no way to play with random people. I don't remember.
No.
Was there? So I did that.
I mean, not immediately, yeah. Early on, though.
So that was like eighth grade. Okay. That was like late 93, early 94, we did that. And we did that with the shareware version, I think. I don't think I had the full one yet.
You could definitely use the shareware.
Yeah, yeah. Shareware, so that was my very first experience. That was just kids I went to Catholic grade school with. We were playing Doom. You know, it was just fun. It was just, you know, one-on-one. Probably the rich kid that I knew. But what I really remember playing was Warcraft 2, the Tides of Darkness multiplayer.
Mm.
And that was through, they had an interface to connect to random people, and there was also a friends list, I believe. I believe there was a friends list in-game, and that wasn't using, like, Battle.net, or whatever the precursor to the Battle.net was, or GeekSpy, whatever. That's what I'm trying to remember.
Because
there was a Battle.net Warcraft, but I didn't have that. I had the original Warcraft,
right.
too.
There was also a Doom client that was really popular for matching up Doom games, and I can't remember what the hell it was called now.
But you remember the Battle.net edition, yes, of Warcraft, yes. 2, right?
Uh-huh.
Which I guess made it, they had the built-in better interface, but I didn't have that. There was still random connections. So I played, you know, you pick a map. There was, and you can pick any map you want, I believe. And then you pick number of players. I think it was up to 4 players of Warcraft 2. I think it was up to 4. Definitely wasn't 8. I think it was 4 players.
I recall 8, but I didn't play a whole lot of it.
Okay, I want to say it was at least 4. And then, you know, you picked if you wanted to be your, if you, which side you want to be on. My name was Buff Peon. That was my avatar name. I was Buff Peon. Peon was the lower, you know, grunt worker. For the orcs, and I like being the orcs versus the humans. And then you just play. I remember seeing the same people every now and then. Maybe it was local or from the same region. I don't remember anyone's name, but I remember we said no grunt rushes. That was the rule, because what people would do was that they would build their barracks as soon as possible and just pump out the orcs, and that's it, the grunts, and just throw them at you and then overwhelm you. So we had like a time limit, like, hey, you can't attack for like 10 minutes. We had to like police ourselves, because it wasn't fun.
Sure.
There was no strategy. You couldn't even build anything else, really, and do that, and then mine gold and stuff. And that was my first experience, and it was fun. The one thing, someone got me early, I must have been, what, 14 or 15. They did the whole trick. Oh, you can... You speed up your connection by hitting, what was it, Shift F12, which I think jumped you out of the game.
Oh, yeah.
So that worked on me one time. I was like, oh, okay, I'll try it. Is it Shift F12 or something? That, like, it closes it out. So I did that one time. Might have been you, Ian. Might have been you that did that to plucky 14-year-old Pat.
Might have been.
15-year-old Pat. But no, that was my early experiences. It was, you got more fun out of the enjoyment that you could just do it. It was just a new concept still. It's like, oh, I can just connect to someone I can't see that is in the same room playing Warcraft or playing Doom. It was just like a weird
playing
sort of...
Playing 1v1 deathmatch Doom was miserable. It wasn't fun at all. That game was not made for that.
No, Duke Nukem was more fun. I remember playing Duke Nukem as well, but that was a little bit later.
Still just the fact that we could do it.
You could do it.
Yeah.
The fact that you could see Doom guy. Like, oh, that's me. Like, that's what you look like. You don't know what he looks like because you never see him in the game. You know, just things like that, and shooting a rocket launcher at him, and everything's on target automatically.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a weird experience because it was more like a proof of concept. The fact that you can do it made it fun. The actual experience,
right? Exactly.
The fact that the experience itself wasn't as good, and actually,
games didn't need to be good online for a little while yet. They just had to be unique.
I can't remember if I had a 28.8 or 56.6 modem at the time, but the lag wasn't terrible on Doom. Warcraft, every once in a while, it would jump, but it was playable.
Yeah,
it was
playable. I mean, they made it to fit the technology they had. Yeah. It was totally playable. I never had any issues.
Yeah, you would get kicked out every now and then, but like you could play games, and it wasn't like terrible. Like now, if the lag's off a little bit with first-person shooters, you can't play them. But it was fun. All right, well, that's a good Q&A. I feel happy thinking about Buff Peon. I won't tell you what my record was. It probably wasn't the greatest playing Warcraft, you know?
Buff Peon.
What are you doing? You're growing there, Ian? You're stretching up there? That's good for this CU podcast. We'll hold off on the other Q&A there.
We can shelve it.
We can shelve it. That'll be a fun one. That's a semi-Tales from the Game Store Q&A.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll save that for next week.
We'll save that one. All right. Well,
I'll bring back some store talking in a way next week. We'll answer a store question.
We're going to be at conventions coming up soon. Pat's going to be at the Missouri Game Con August 3rd. And then we're going to both be at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo August 10th and 11th.
Woo!
We're going to get some Long Island pizza. Come on, you want a slice? Get you a slice, eh? Come on. Hey, Tony!
Actually, I'm going to be eating White Castle.
White Castle? You miss White Castle?
I never had White Castle.
You never even had like the ones in the store there?
I've had the frozen ones.
They taste eerily similar. Like, it's the same thing.
I'm into it. But I've never been to the actual place.
Okay. I think I was once to the actual White Castle. My dad went there. Get those sliders. Just slide on through you.
Gonna get real.
Don't they call them sliders or no?
They're called sliders because they come in a little box and it slides out of the box.
And they slide through your intestinal tract.
But I used to think that joke as well. So I mean,
because they're a little greasy. They're a little greasy. White Castle. That is. I always forget that's an East Coast thing. Like they're not world. They're not nationwide.
Yeah, they're not everywhere.
That's really strange. And they're not everywhere anyway. Like they're not like in every town. It's
well,
like
no, they're here. The thing. I grew up in Buffalo, New York. They're in New York. They're just not in Buffalo, New York.
Well, I mean, even in New Jersey, I could find one, but it's not like Burger King, McDonald's that are like in every city. Like you have to drive to one.
Yeah,
like 15, 20 minutes.
Like if you wanted to go to a White Castle in Buffalo, your quickest one to drive to was in Cincinnati, I believe.
Oh wow.
Yeah, or Cleveland.
Okay. All right.
Because I had friends who did it.
It's like Friendly's a fast food. They're like, they're around. You just got to find them.
Yeah.
All right. So for Ian Ferguson, I'm Pat Contry. Take care, everyone. We'll see you in a weekish time.
We'll see you soon.